Americans are spending too much on rent. That's according to a new report from the National Low Income Housing Coalition, which finds that rent is not affordable for a growing number of Americans. Joining us from Washington is Linda Couch, Senior Vice President for Policy at the Coalition. Welcome.
Thank you.
And when we talk about affordable rent, what does that mean? What is affordable?
Well, it means different things to different people, but generally the standard is you're paying affordable amount for your housing if your housing costs about 30% of your household's income.
30%. So if you're spending more than 30%, you're spending too much on rent.
That's right. And if you're paying more than 50% of your income toward your housing costs, you're considered severely cost burdened.
OK, so let's look at what you found. And it really varies depending on where you are in the country. Hawaii, the most expensive place, perhaps not surprisingly, with people there needing to make $31.61 an hour in order to afford the rent there. In Puerto Rico, it's the least expensive. People only have to make there $10.53 an hour to afford a two-bedroom apartment. Why the huge range?
Well, it has to do with stock and availability and the number of units that are out there, obviously, and what they're renting for. It also has to do with what people are earning and what their incomes are. Places like Hawaii and, you know, everywhere across the United States, including Puerto Rico, there is a common theme, though, that, you know, there's nowhere in the country someone could work full time at minimum wage and afford the average one bedroom. Even where it shows up as being the cheapest in Puerto Rico, that $10 plus an hour is well above the minimum wage.
The minimum wage right now is $7.25 an hour. And if you look at a place like, let's say, Atlanta, people there need to make almost $16 an hour to afford a two-bedroom apartment.
That's right. And, you know, then they only have to make almost $15 an hour to afford the average one bedroom, or they could work 82 hours a week at minimum wage. So I think the report tells the story that, you know, people are working, but there is a massive mismatch, a gap between what people are earning and what rents really are.
So how are they making up that difference? Are they just spending too much on rent? Are they doubling up in apartments or what?
Several things. So obviously, I think the first one is that people are paying way more than they can actually afford for their housing costs. And we see this as really problematic for the poorest households, because it's in those households where you see people paying, you know, 70-80% of their household's income for their monthly rent.
70 or 80% of their income on rent.
That's right, which is obviously problematic. You know, you see the poorest households having very little left over for food, for transportation, for health care, for medicine. Other cases, you know, we see doubling up. We see tripling up of households, of families with children, without children. We also see families living perhaps in substandard conditions. So, you know, housing that doesn't meet quality standards. And then you also have families living really far away from their jobs just so they can make ends meet, which, you know, which takes time out of their calendar, too, time that they would probably rather spend with their families, with their kids doing homework, attending events with their families. So it takes its toll. And obviously the worst case outcome is homelessness. When, you know, all the networks have crumbled down to a point where housing options are nil, and that's when homelessness occurs.
But if the rents are going up so much, why isn't more supply coming onto the market? You would think that some landlord would think, I could make a lot of money on this if everybody's willing to pay so much rent.
That's a great question. You know, there was an article a couple of weeks ago in the Wall Street Journal that looked at, you know, just that. And most of the new construction, and there's a lot of new construction in multifamily and rental going on right now, but the vast majority of it is in the luxury category. Which is disconcerting because the need is not in the luxury income market. And in Denver, for example, virtually all of the new construction is in the luxury category, which in a normal market would mean that the rents in the older buildings would go down because there would be more supply. But there's such a vast shortage of rental housing supply that the rents in the older properties aren't going down.
So what would help? What is the National Low Income Housing Coalition recommending?
Well, you could attack this problem in two different ways. You can increase the minimum wage so that people could actually afford the housing in their areas, or you can increase the supply of affordable housing for lower income households. We work on the latter solution. We think that the country is way behind in publicly investing in affordable housing options. That's both, you know, hard units helping subsidize new apartment buildings that, you know, don't look like the old school projects, but look like modern day, vibrant, beautiful communities that have a range of incomes in them. We stopped doing that almost 30 or 40 years ago, and it's time to restart the production. But also increasing rental subsidies, housing vouchers, is another option. And every community needs a mix of both.
That's Linda Couch, the Senior Vice President for Policy at the National Low Income Housing Coalition. Linda, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Jeremy.
Well, joining us now with some more on this, to put it in context of the broader housing market, we're joined by Chris Arnold, NPR correspondent who covers housing. And Chris, what do you make of what we just heard there? Rents getting very high, people having to spend more of their money to pay for rent. First of all, how many people are deciding, I'm not going to bother with this, I'm just going to buy instead?
We're seeing a couple of different things going on. And some of this, I should say, is surprising to economists because we were seeing a pretty good housing recovery. You know, you look at the trend line, you know, on a chart of the pace of home sales, and it's going up and up and up. Okay, we're getting back to normal. And then about 2 years ago, the summer of 2013, something happened and it got choppy and leveled off. It would be a couple months up, a couple months down, and we really have gone nowhere since the summer of 2013. So one statistic that's just evidence of that that's pretty striking: we are still down near 50-year lows in home construction. So that means you go all the way back to 1960, and we are building fewer housing units to buy today than we were in 1960, even though the population is nearly doubled. That tells you something is still very wrong with the housing market.
By and large, of course, there are some people who are probably listening to this saying, well, wait a minute, in my city, in San Francisco or in New York or Boston, the market is very strong right now. That doesn't really apply to me. But by and large, why? Why is the housing market just clunking along given that the economy has been improving generally?
Nationally, the biggest reason is probably first-time home buyers. They're just not showing up. In a normal market, in normal times, 40 to 50% of home sales are people striking out for the first time. Maybe they were renting or living with mom and dad. They're getting married. They're settling down. They got a good job. They're buying a house. We are seeing a lot less of that happening, and that's a huge part of it. And that's also a reason why we're just hearing about rents being so high, because there aren't as many people transitioning from that rental lifestyle to the ownership society kind of thing.
So there's more demand for rent, so rent goes up. What are economists saying about this?
Well, they say, look, if you can buy and you're renting, it's kind of nuts. I was talking with William Wheaton, who's an economist at MIT, who's followed housing forever. And he's like, look, I got one question for you. If you are renting, why are you not buying? I mean, maybe 2 years ago would have been the perfect time, but now it's still pretty good from his perspective. Look, interest rates are only going to go up on mortgages. Home prices in many places are probably going to keep rising. If you can afford it, he's saying you should do it sooner. You're going to miss the boat.
If you can afford it, and that's the big if, because there are a lot of reasons why people wouldn't be able to buy.
Absolutely. Look, you might have graduated recently, you have a degree, but you're working at Starbucks or doing something else because you can't find a good job, or you're underemployed in some other way. There's other people who they lost their job in the recession, their credit got messed up, so it's, you know, it's hard for them to buy. And there's four other scenarios where the recession and the aftermath have sort of goofed things up. There are actually two schools of thought on what's going on here. One school of thought says, well, we'll push through this, things get back to normal, everything's fine. The other school of thought is, well, look, maybe we're in some kind of new normal where there is a change in personal preference. Younger people saying, you know what? I don't want to buy. I don't want to have to mow my lawn. I want to live in the city. I would say more economists are in the camp that say, well, look, there are just so many advantages to owning and being a part of that ownership society. It's going to come back. The housing market's going to come back. We're not in some kind of new normal.
Advantages like what?
Well, you think renting is expensive now. If you're renting an apartment, I can guarantee you the cost of renting is going to go up. It's the only direction it's going to go. If you buy a place and you lock in an interest rate in a 30-year or better yet, a 15-year mortgage, given inflation and the value of money over time, your monthly payments are going to go down. And eventually, if you pay that off and you retire and you got a house is all done and paid for, you're in an infinitely better place than you are on a fixed income facing rising rents. I mean, just there are so many reasons to own versus rent.
It's funny you say you guarantee that the rent will continue to go up. I'm trying to think if I've ever known anyone who said to me, my landlord just got in touch and our rent's going down this year. I don't think that's ever happened.
I don't think.
If it has, please let us know at hereandnow.org if that's happened to you. Yeah. But Chris, I guess we should say all housing is local and it may be time to buy in certain places. It may not be in other places.
Absolutely. I mean, you just said, look, there's some markets that are hot, hot, hot right now. And then you go two blocks over in one direction in some cities and it's a totally different price is the right price. So you have to be very careful. You have to really know the market. And you should be excited about being in this house for at least 5 years because, hey, prices could dip. You might get stuck.
NPR correspondent Chris Arnold, who covers housing for us. Chris, thank you so much.
You're welcome.